Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV
One. Good morning, folks. I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, Donald Trump said, what do black people have to lose voting for him? Looking at his budget, a hell of a whole lot. Why is the man who wants to say he wants to create jobs cutting programs that also boost black-owned businesses? Omarosa said they were going to increase funding for HBCUs. Guess what? No new money. We'll break that down. Also, Congressional Budget Office releases their score for the recently House Republican health care bill. Guess what? Lots of bad news. 23 million more Americans will not have health insurance. They're cutting billions of dollars from Medicaid. Also, rural hospitals will be also hurt. Guess what, all you Trump voters? Hashtag, we tried to tell you. Also, Dr. Ben Carson, he says poverty is a state of mind. Really? Also, in Montana, a House Republican candidate body slams a reporter over questioning him about the CBO. Really? Really? You're fighting reporters. All right, folks, a highly controversial Texas voter ID law is getting a makeover that appears to finally benefit voters. We'll talk with State Senator Royce West about the changes. Also, giving back to HBCUs, we'll talk with Florida A&M's National Alumni Association president about alumni giving and also issues that have taken place at that university over the last year. And spiritual life coach Yana Van Zandt is here. All of that on News One Now. Let's bring the funk. Let's go. Donald Trump's budget kills a lot of low-income programs, also programs helping rural hospitals and others, deep cuts to food stamps, welfare, other programs, and guess what? The richest will also benefit from this budget. But more importantly, it targets programs that have helped African-American businesses as well as HBCUs. The budget would eliminate the nearly 50-year-old Minority Business Development Agency. The program is run out of the Department of Commerce. It is the only federal agency established solely to create jobs through the growth of minority-owned businesses in the U.S. I thought he wanted to be the job creator. The Trump administration believes that an MBDA, which helps get minority businesses access to capital, contracts, and markets, duplicates other federal, state, local, and private sector initiatives. Really? Remember that high-profile meeting in February? Oval Office, Trump, HBCU presidents. Well, guess what? No new money for HBCUs. Of course, 2 weeks ago, he promised unwavering support to HBCUs. Well, the budget proposal takes aim at federal financial aid programs that thousands of HBCU students depend on. That includes the Federal Supplemental Education Opportunity Grant Program, a $732 million program helps students based on financial need. More than 55,000 HB students would be hurt. Protesters. Several Democratic lawmakers, folks, got some issues here, and they blast the budget proposal as being immoral.
Hands off, Mr. President. Hands off. We're going to reject this morally bankrupt budget, and we will resist it here in Congress, but most importantly, in the streets of America.
But White House Budget Chief Mick Mulvaney and Education Secretary Betsy DeVos were on Capitol Hill defending the document that's caused so much drama from both parties.
We are not going to kick any deserving person off of any meaningful program. We want to help people just as much as you do. Republicans care about poor people as much as Democrats.
Well, we couldn't tell by that budget. On the phone right now, joining us is Ron Busby, who is the president and CEO, U.S. Black Chambers, Inc., Bond. Ron, when you look at this budget and how they are impacting minority businesses, your response?
I think this budget really indicates the priorities of this administration. Although we understand that Congress really has to approve the budget, the president sets his priorities in this budget, and you've seen through both the things that he wants to do in reference to increasing the military, increasing spending on defense. He also is gutting all of the programs that have historically helped minorities, African Americans, and small businesses across the country. The NBDA office is out of the Department of Commerce. It has the smallest budget. Actually, 0.001% of the national spending goes to minority agencies that support local black and small businesses across the country. And to say that we no longer want to see that those agencies have the funding to be able to continue to support the businesses across the country, to me, shows that the president is not concerned about local communities, about minority-owned businesses, as well as the communities in which they are operating.
But, Ron, I thought he wanted to be the job creator. If you're trying to create jobs, how do you cut money for minority businesses?
I agree, Roland. This budget, the $32 million that this budget has put into effect into the MBDA, you'll understand that for each dollar that is invested, there's $85 of return. Those returns are in contracts. Those returns are in opportunities for loans for small businesses. We understand that in our communities across the country, the number one concern that we have is unemployment. There's actually roughly 2 million unemployed African Americans this morning, but at the same time, there's 2 million African American-owned businesses. Through programs like MBDA, we're able to keep those businesses in existence to continue to grow, prosper, and to hire additional employees. This budget really guts all the programs, not just for African Americans, but for the entire minority community, business community, which to me is just the opposite of what this president ran on in reference to creating jobs and opportunities for businesses. To me, this just goes totally against everything he stood on.
All right, Ron Busby, we sort of appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to our panel here. To my right, I have Lynn McAllister, Republican strategist, also Ralph Chittum's principal with Black Elephant Consultant, also Republican. Carmen Berkley, principal with Can't Stop, Won't Stop Strategies. Dr. Julian Malvo, economist and president emerita of Bennett College. All right, folks, seriously.
Roland, you know, the thing...
What's up? I thought, Mr. Job Creator.
You know, here's the thing that is really messed up about this. Richard Nixon started the Minority Business Development Agency using the term that you would never think would come out of a Republican mouth, economic justice. In 1968, he said that it was in the interest of our nation for everybody to participate in the capitalistic process. And he used the terms as the interest of economic justice to ensure that people of color had the opportunity to participate. So for that man, 45, and Mulvaney, who has always been about cutting, to go after one of the most dynamic engines. Understand that minority businesses are one of the most dynamic engines of growth in our nation right now. For them to go after that while talking about privatizing infrastructure, there's so much in that budget that's so dangerous. But this piece here is a dangerous piece, and we need to resist it.
Unfortunately, it also shows that, and this has been said about Donald Trump since 2015, since he announced the race, he doesn't really articulate or practice conservatism. You can't both cut the ways for people to get into the middle class and at the same exact time cut access to capital that's going to allow them to create jobs for themselves. And it goes back to what Dr. Malvo said. Absolutely, it's in the best interest of the country to be able to get people to move them from being locked in generational poverty to get them to the middle class and beyond. And it doesn't seem as though that seems to be the focus. The focus is purely on the bottom line and trying to get that bottom line number down. But you're never going to do that if you can't get people to work.
And Ralph, here's the other issue. If you're talking about, all he talked about last year was how we're not competitive and we're losing to everybody else. How the hell would you cut student aid for college students when you're dealing with $1 trillion in student loan debt? Affecting 55,000 HBCU students? Yeah, you ask the question, what the hell do you have to lose? A lot.
Well, the attack on the student loans and the Parent PLUS loans, that's something that's been going on in this country, not just under the Donald Trump administration, but under previous administrations.
Right. And Ralph, we covered it on the show, but I'm specifically talking about Donald Trump's budget.
And I said, that needs to stop. I mean, we all know that education is the key to advancement unless you're going to get into a trade. No, unless you're going to be an electrician or a plumber or something of those nature.
But you need education there as well.
But you don't need a college degree, is what I'm getting
actually, community college certification, but you still need some form of training. Go ahead.
Right. So education clearly is the key to advancement. And it is in the national security interest of this nation to help all of its citizens to get that education because it is in our national interest to do so.
So are Black Republicans weighing in, telling Donald Trump what the hell's up with his budget?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what needs to happen, actually.
Well, and I think, number one, I think more of us that are out there need to be doing that. I know I have, and I know that the organization I work with now in Pennsylvania is, because, and it goes back to something that Ralph said that people overlook, it's about national sovereignty. We have to win when it comes to innovation. We have to win when it comes to the economy, as well as be ready from a military standpoint.
And if we're not going to win, and we can't be ready unless we really talk about shared prosperity. This budget does not deal with shared prosperity.
Carmen, Trump kept saying, "What the hell do you have to lose to Black people?" We are seeing a lot to lose with his health care, a lot to lose with his budget, a lot to lose when it comes to HBCUs, when it comes to minority business. We haven't gotten to the 6-month point.
Exactly.
Yet.
I mean, but people thought that Omarosa was going to be the answer to all Black things in the White House, and we see that that is indeed not true.
I'm just saying,
you know, people were excited. There was a Black woman in the White House, and she's not going to save us. So, at least to me, I think that you're absolutely right when you talk about oftentimes Black business owners are nonpartisan, and they don't take a side. Now is the time for Black business owners, Black chambers to take a side, because this isn't just about, this is about communities. It's not just about people building up their businesses and getting more money.
All right, hold tight 1 second, folks. We're also impacted, of course, by the health care bill. And yesterday, the Congressional Budget Office finally released their score on that particular bill. And it is not good. A CBO says the bill would leave 23 million more Americans uninsured within a decade if it became law. The analysis also estimates that insurance costs for people with pre-existing conditions would skyrocket. House Republicans managed to push through the bill, which would repeal the Affordable Care Act without any vote from Democrats and before the nonpartisan CBO weighed in with their analysis on its impact. Now, what's interesting is House Speaker Paul Ryan yesterday said, oh, this is going to lower the deficit. He didn't read the rest of it. Democrats were not happy.
And the CBO score just confirms that the House repeal bill is still a humanitarian catastrophe for America.
You can call it a destroy health care bill. You could call it a tax break for the rich bill, but we should not call it a health care bill because I have never seen a health care bill which throws 23 million Americans off of health insurance. That's not a health care bill.
All right, folks, let's get right to it to talk about the CBO report. Joining us is Tara O'Neill Hayes, Deputy Director of Healthcare Policy at the American Action Forum. All right, Tara. So Republicans say, hey, this lowers the deficit. Is that it?
It does lower the deficit by $119 billion, which is not something you should ignore, given that we're $20 trillion in debt. However, it also will reduce premiums in the future. It will give people more choice and more access. Right now, the individual insurance market is failing. You have premium increases of 25% this year, after 10% increases last year, and we're expecting at least 20% increases next year, minimum.
But ask you a question. What about, though, the folks with pre-existing conditions, the elderly, who are going to see premiums skyrocket, some estimates, 800%? Do they matter?
Absolutely, Martin, they matter. You can't ignore that. But what you have to understand is the pre-existing condition, there's a lot of fear there with that provision. But Kaiser just came out with a report in the last week that only 27 million people had a break in coverage in 2015 that would make them eligible for this potential, the potential to be medically underwritten. But then you also have to realize that only folks in states that take a waiver and have that gap in coverage and have a pre-existing condition could see their premiums increase. So that 27 million then becomes 6 million. And then really, given that CBO only estimates a sixth of the population lives in a state that would take a waiver, down to 1 million, which is less than 0.5% of the U.S. population.
So the hell with those 1 million people?
No,
we're gonna have
absolutely not.
And Tara, what do you say about those rural hospitals, the way you've seen dramatic closures? During the President Obama administration, you saw that North Carolina, Louisiana, and Mississippi. So all of those Trump voters, all those folks wearing the Make America Great Again hats, they're the ones who are going to be impacted because as a result of this bill, you're going to see more rural hospitals shut down. What do you tell those folks?
So actually, this bill puts $43 billion back into the DSH program, the disproportionate share hospital program,
but here's
that
the,
Obamacare
Tara,
actually
but
cut.
Tara, but here's
so
the problem, though.
$43 billion is going back to those hospitals.
But you're not going to allow Medicaid expansion, and the states that had Medicaid expansion, that's what allowed them to keep those hospitals open. The CBO also said, as a result of this bill, various states are not going to be able to fill that hole. In Oregon, they estimate having a $2.8 billion hole in their budget as a result of this bill. What do you say to those states that have actually benefited from the Affordable Care Act? What do you say to them? They're now looking at anywhere from $1 to $3 billion to make up in their state budgets.
States across the country are facing budget deficits because Medicaid is unsustainable as it currently exists.
But if Medicaid is unsustainable, how are you cutting $800 billion out of it and then somehow believing it's going to get better?
Because we're overspending. We're making small cuts. This is over 10 years. And when you actually look at the per person cut, it's really not going to be that much. And what it does is it forces states to actually think about how they're spending their money. Right now, it's an open-ended entitlement program, and there's no incentive for states to control their costs and manage their population well.
So, Tara, answer this question. Although the CBO and JCT expect that federal funding would have the intended effect of lowering premiums and out-of-pocket payments to some extent, its effect on community-rated premiums will be small because the funding would not be sufficient to substantially reduce the large increases in premiums for high-cost enrollees. The CBO is saying, look, you can add the money to it. It's not going to make up for the higher premiums that will result from this bill.
Well, Roland, what would you say to the people who are faced with no insurance option whatsoever next year? The markets are not working. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kansas City just announced yesterday that they are leaving that market. They are currently the only insurer. That means people in 30 counties in Missouri next year will have no option.
No, actually, the people where they have no insurance also able to go into the federal exchange. But here's the problem. What do you say to the people, again, who have a pre-existing condition, and the insurance company says, we're not going to cover you, but on the Affordable
Care Act.
But on the Affordable Care Act, they were covered. What do you say to the people, the millions of people who before had no insurance whatsoever, who now have insurance, and we've actually seen dramatic drops across the country of folks visiting emergency rooms? You know the impact of that? That means that there are fewer people who go into emergency rooms who can't afford it, which means counties no longer have rising deficits, folks going to county hospitals, which means taxes don't have to go up in those counties.
Well, we have seen our debt go up to $20 trillion.
No. I didn't say federal deficit.
Roland, you have to understand, this bill does not repeal the guaranteed issue provision of the Affordable Care Act.
No insurer
can deny insurance to anyone because they have a pre-existing condition.
You can be denied because if you're put in a pre-existing pool where the numbers are going to skyrocket, guess
but
what?
There is over $100 billion worth of funding to help pay for those costs and
but
to
it
help
doesn't cover
those individuals. There might be more money that is needed, and
so
The Senate can address that. This is not the final product. This is still going through the process, and any of these concerns hopefully will be addressed as the Senate moves forward.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tara, you might have great health insurance, but I can tell you there are a whole bunch of Trump supporters out there who voted for him, who are now crying, who are now sitting here sad because they're realizing they're about to get screwed. And I'm going to tell you right now, if this bill stands, you can kiss goodbye Republican majorities in the House and
the
Senate come 2018.
They can kiss goodbye their coverage anyway because insurers are fleeing the market. They might not have any option anyway.
Well, insurers are fleeing the market because also they've been strangled by folks not putting the money into the system. And secondly, they're also fleeing the market because they say it's not sustainable. But I do know one thing. The health care insurance costs, the health care stock prices have greatly increased in the last 4 months. All right, Tara, we'll see what happens next with the United States Senate.
All right,
thank you. All right, folks, coming up next on News 1 Now, Ben Carson, Howland Secretary. Y'all, he really said poverty is a state of mind. That's next on News 1 Now TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks. Dr. Ben Carson, the head of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, faced an intense backlash yesterday after he called poverty a state of mind. Carson, who oversees the department and handles housing for millions of low-income Americans, made the comments during a radio interview on Tuesday with Armstrong Williams, his business partner and also a conservative media personality. During the conversation, Carson said he thought some people were poor because of their outlook on life. I think poverty, to a large extent, is also a state of mind. You take somebody that has the right mindset, you can take everything from them and put them on the street, and I guarantee in a little while, they'll be right back up there. He would want to add, helping people may not better their lives. You take somebody with the wrong mindset, you can give them everything in the world, they'll work their way right back down to the bottom.
That don't even make no sense.
Put our panel.
You know what? Poverty is a state of lack of paycheck.
Right.
You know, that it's not a state of mind. I mean, this dude, he should have stuck to his lane. He was a brilliant brain surgeon, but somehow somebody did not do surgery on his brain. This is just nonsense, especially it's startling because he leads the Department of Housing and Urban Development, which provides people with a leg up, which provides people with opportunity.
Not anymore.
One of the biggest expenses that people face is housing. And we know what's happening in the housing market. We see gentrification all over our country. We see people unable to afford. And so for him to suggest that markets are a state of mind is to give us all this Zen space that does not exist in terms of economic reality.
I will give you what he was going after, and I will give you the problem with how he did it. He was trying to go after, look, part of poverty is also how you approach your situation, how you work and invest yourself moving forward to get out of the economic situation you're in. The problem with how he said it is it always ends up blaming the victim. If you're locked in generational poverty and you're the third generation of that generational poverty, it is what you know, it is what your mom and dad knew, it is what your grandmother and your grandfather knew. So there is something to be said about what's in your bank account, where you live, what schools you go to, and what access you have to resources that when you take this tone that he did, unfortunately, it seems to overlook all of that and make it seem as though you're in poverty because it's on you. And that's not how the America that we know really boils down to these days.
Right. It's
We know this.
What he did was he only addressed one aspect of the total picture.
That's now, usual for him.
But
and that's that problematic.
Right. But it doesn't negate that there is a truism to what he said, that there are segments of the population, black and white, that no matter what you try, no matter how you try to help them, they are not going to try to help themselves.
Give me examples of how
you help people that are not trying to help them, because that does not exist.
And there are poor people who are poor. And I have a friend whose family history is, you know, the grandmother moved out to California, had six kids, lived in a tent, dirt floor with nothing, but they were able to move up out of
that situation. Oh, that is the exception to the rule. That's the pull yourself up by your bootstraps type of mentality. That's not reality.
What he said is there is a truth to what he said, but he didn't, as Lenny said, he didn't.
Here's the problem with Dr. Carson doing it. Anytime, particularly a black male or a black conservative right. says that, the image that most of America puts in their mind is black. Is of black people not doing what they need to do to get out of poverty. That is why it is irresponsible to say that and not say it completely. If you're not going to give the full picture, don't say it at all because you play into a stereotype. I mean, and you might as well say welfare queen.
And precisely. And here's the other thing that happens, okay? Tell that to all these white folks who are well-to-do in Connecticut and Vermont and New Hampshire who can't kick their opioid addiction.
Hello. Uh-oh.
Western Pennsylvania.
Hold up. Talk about that. Talk about this town in West Virginia where they dropped 4 million pills, and no matter what you do, no matter what kind of help you give, it can't help themselves. The reality is this here, because we know how, to your point about stereotypes, how it is played. Somebody hears that and they go, oh,
yep.
black guy
yep.
talking to a black guy?
Yep.
He talking about those people. Mm-hmm. And here's the reality. And Harry Belafonte talked about this in his particular book, Sing a Song. He said his mother worked hard as all get out and could not escape poverty. Some of the hardest working people in America, working way more harder in the top 1%, are in poverty. But when you give that attitude of, and then of course you compare that, take that, and pair it with his comments on the housing tour, we've made things too comfortable for folks in housing. I mean,
roaches are comfortable.
I mean, he literally sounded like, hey, just slide them a piece of bread and some water
and
put them on a cement bed, because otherwise any other comfort creatures, oh, that's too comfortable for
and
people
Roland,
in house.
And that's so crazy. Roland, that so segues with Mick Mulvaney's remarks about the budget, where he talks about people need to work. If you're disabled but you faking, I don't know too many people who fake disability. If you're disabled but you faking, you need to work. No matter who you are, you need to work. But the fact of the matter is, people do work. But if you earn $7.25 an hour, which is the federal minimum wage, you can work in your sleep and you are still not going to get out of poverty. If you have, you know, you're working at a big box store where they won't give you the 40 hours or the 35 hours that give you the health insurance that you need. So you're making decisions. Do I buy shoes for my oldest son, or do I buy books for my youngest daughter? You cannot work your way out of that. We have created a space that is hostile to poor people,
and Carson
basically exacerbates
that. And here's the problem. The Trump administration has decided Carson is going to be their point man on all poverty issues related to this administration.
But they did that on purpose. That's why they put a brain surgeon to do housing and urban development, because they knew that he didn't know what he was doing and that he unfortunately represents the majority of Black America, since he's one of the Black people in the administration.
And Omarosa. And you Republicans, I'm going to talk, I mean, I love y'all. We all kick it. But let me say this. You have allowed an imposter to come in under the umbrella of your party to pimp our presidents, and y'all are, she's a Democrat, y'all Republicans. How come y'all won't stand up for yourselves?
First of all, you got a Democrat that just became a Republican not too long ago. I don't even think the ink's dry on his registration card.
Trump.
Who ended up running for president and
y'all,
winning.
And y'all
That's the first one. The second,
too.
Hold on, the second thing is, you have a whole lot of Democrats and independents that allowed him to win Republican primaries in open primary states, that allowed him to get the momentum he needed to beat good Republican candidates, people like Jeb Bush and others that were not talking some of this nonsense. Yeah. So let's not put it all on the feet of Republicans. If you want to talk about what happened in 2015
you,
and 2016, oh, I've been out there. I've been on the front lines for years.
I want to see some of y'all others.
But hold on. I will say this here, and Ralph, you know, I have challenged you on this many times. I challenged Bishop Harry Jackson on this as well. I keep going back to this. I have yet to see, because I'll be there with my cameras. I have yet to see a major news conference of prominent Black Republicans standing unified, calling out the party on voter suppression,
calling out this
ridiculous budget on cutting minority businesses, calling out the promises with HBCUs, not fulfilling them, and then saying to Dr. Ben Carson, dude, you sound crazy making these comments. And you said, hey, we've called some people. We've had Gianna Caldwell on here, Brandon Cooper on here. And oh, people say individually we've done this. But I'm saying, where's the collective call to action?
You bring your cameras, I'll put it together.
Y'all put it together. We're there and I'll live stream it.
Okay.
Don't answer her. Answer my question. I've asked you this multiple times. When will that happen?
Roland, they scurred.
One second. When will that happen? When will you, J.C. Watts, and numerous others stand up and say, look, we are not going to be silent about this. We will be speaking to our party the same way Colin Powell did when he went to North Carolina and chastised the governor for that voter suppression bill.
I'm on record criticizing
not
this
administration. You. That's what you're asking. I'm asking you about collective, not you as an individual.
And I went to the campaign. I'm on record saying Donald Trump is no conservative and he's barely a Republican.
Here's the condition.
We don't agree with this.
I'll take lead on this. But the condition I'm going to put out there for non-Black Republican African Americans is this. When we take a stand as Republicans against the party, and you all take a step back and be like, well, I don't know if I can stand with that brother, even though what he's saying is right, we end up taking 5 steps back in our career. Sometimes it affects our money. Sometimes it affects our public image. I'm a public figure. I know I've gone through that for 10 years. So I'm going to say that when we do this, You all need to step up as well and say we are united and we will do this.
Let me perfectly clear. I've covered this stuff on this show.
I know you have.
I've told multiple people. And I can tell you right now, y'all do that, you'll be on Tom Joyner Morning Show, you'll be on this show. But again, as long as black Republicans are silent, collectively, I didn't say individually.
No, I hear you 100%.
Then I think you're going to still see folks, this happens. I got to go to a break. We come back. I'm going to talk about the Republican in Montana. How you going to body slam a reporter by asking you about the CBO?
He was bigger than him.
Also, Yolanda Van Zandt's on the show. And maybe she can help fix my life, fix this administration. That's next, News 1 on TV 1.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, y'all. Greg Gianforte, Republican candidate in Montana's special congressional election, has been charged with misdemeanor assault after he allegedly body slammed a reporter and broke his glasses Wednesday night. The altercation took place at Gianforte's campaign headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, the night before the state's special election. Ben Jacobs, a political reporter for The Guardian, said he had been asking Gianforte about the Republican health care plan when the candidate body slammed him, breaking his glasses, and then began shouting at him. Now, the campaign said that Jacobs went after him and wrestled with Gianforte. Here's the audio of what happened.
And what we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you
okay,
have the
speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last Jesus time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
Jesus.
Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
The last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
All right, so in that recording, he asked other people in the room, did you see that? They didn't say a word. They were with Fox News. They released their own account confirming everything Jacob said happened and said he was not at all belligerent to the Congress, to the potential congressman. The three Montana newspapers all endorsed Gianforte last night, have pulled their endorsements. The election is today. We might have a thug coming to Congress.
We have thugs in Congress.
Oh. You don't have a thug who has physically assaulted somebody.
It's unfortunate. And the truth of the matter is, when you look at folks like that and they can't keep their cool in that type of situation with one reporter, with one recording device, what are they going to do when the pressure of the country's coming on with billions of dollars at stake and other type of domestic and international situations going on?
Especially if it's about health care. I mean, that's why he beat him up, because he was asking
a question
about health care reform.
About the Congressional Budget Office score.
If you can't talk about CBO, you need to stay on
the
Montana.
And he attacked a man.
Right, but here's the silver lining in all of this. He did it before he got into Congress, and now he won't be elected.
No, that's not necessarily. The problem is, some polls had it close, some had a much larger margin, and according to some folks there, Montana has, I think, mail-in balloting. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks have already voted.
Yes, they did.
A tremendous number of people have already voted. So we might have somebody who attacked the reporter actually be elected to Congress. And I wonder, will Republicans in D.C., will Speaker Paul Ryan, will Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, will the Republican National Committee, will the Montana State Republican folks, will they say a word, or will they say, look, we want that seat?
The fact is that party loyalty.
Well, but he's new. So he's not going to get a chairmanship.
No, heretofore, party loyalty has trumped integrity, has trumped decency. Indeed, if we believed that there was anything called integrity and decency, we would have a different kind of investigation about the Russian ties to this president. We would have Jeff Sessions being excoriated. So this is just power for the course for a party full of hoodlums. With all due respect to y'all.
This is not just party stuff. This is problematic of American politics. This is not something that's going on.
Dr. Malvo, I'll give you an example.
For example, there was a gentleman that was indicted for political corruption in Western Pennsylvania that won by 25% of the vote just in November. We see this all across the country. You can go to Chicago, you can go to Philadelphia, you can go across. Pennsylvania is the fifth most corrupt political state in the nation. We see this all the time on both sides of the aisle. This is not just of the Republican Party. Now, what I do think could happen with this gentleman, should he end up, and I use gentleman very loosely, should he end up winning the election tonight, you can censor him, you could force him to resign and put another Republican in there, you could still keep party loyalty and not reward this individual for thuggish behavior. But
final comment, go.
The Republican Party didn't even spank Donald Trump enough for sexually harassing women on tape. So, of course, they're not going to go after a Montana representative.
All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, how do we increase alumni donations to HBCUs? We'll talk with the president of Florida A&M's National Alumni Association about that. Also, Yonla Van Zandt is here. Maybe she can help heal this crazy, wild country. I'm also asking about trying to fix this rift between Monique, Tyler Perry, Oprah, and Lee Daniels. Lord. 19 before top of the hour. News One Now, TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Baltimore's police union is attacking the administrative charges brought against five of the six police officers involved in the death of Freddie Gray. No shock. Union President Gene Ryan says the case will perpetuate a police force headed to exercise judgment when interacting with the public. Oh, so you want to just kill folks. Gray is a black man who died of injuries suffered in police custody in the back of a police van. Internal charges were filed against five of the six cops after an independent review and three face dismissal. All right, well, of course they always want to sit here and say, nah, don't do anything to the cops because it's going to make our jobs more harder. But let's just keep killing people. All right, folks. Also, we're close to getting the start of the Bill Cosby sexual assault trial, and the main people who will decide his fate have been chosen. The main jury consists of seven men, five women, only two are African-American. Defense lawyers have accused prosecutors of trying to block black jurors from the panel, but the DA denied it, and the judge overruled the challenge. The actor comedian is charged with drugging and molesting a Temple University women's basketball team manager at his home in Philadelphia in 2004. He has denied all allegations of misconduct. He does not plan to testify during the trial, which begins on June 5th. All right, folks, around 70% of all HBCU students rely on federal grants and work-study programs to finance their education. But it also matters when it comes to HBCUs that alumni actually give back to the university. Well, Florida A&M, the alumni have their national convention taking place here in the area. But one of the problems is that HBCU giving by alumni is extremely low. Let's talk about that right now with the national president, folks, of the Florida A&M University National Alumni Association, Lieutenant Colonel Gregory Clark. So, Lieutenant Clark, I got to ask you this here on this whole issue in terms of giving. And look, I didn't go to HBCU, but I've advocated of HBCUs on this show. I've spoken at numerous commencements on college campuses. And I say it all the time, I don't want to hear people talk about going back to homecoming if they're not leaving a check for the university.
I agree, Roland. I think we have an obligation to give. Certainly, HBCUs take us in, they educate us, and they send us out into the world. But for some reason, once we get out into the world, we kind of forget where we come from. So we have an obligation. We should give back, especially those that have gotten scholarships from the university. They owe the university to give back and support it, and we just haven't been doing it. We got to do a great job.
And look,
job with it.
And look, I understand when folks talk about African Americans don't have the same access to capital as whites. When you talk about college graduates, the unemployment rate for black college graduates is double that of white college graduates. But when we talk about giving, mm-hmm. we're not talking about, oh, you're asking every graduate to give $5,000 or $1,000.
Right.
It's the people who don't even send back a dollar.
Hello.
Not even a dollar.
Right, right. And they don't do it. I take in point, we'd come to homecoming and we'd pay Delta Airlines to come in, whatever that costs. We'd pay the hotel. We eat, drink, we party, but we don't leave a check with the university and we go back home and think it's okay. That's unacceptable. And we got to do a better job of giving back.
Now, the Florida A&M alumni raised $715,000 at your convention that begins today in Baltimore. And so But what is the percentage at Florida A&M of giving? When I had the president of Howard University on, he told me that when he came in, of the undergraduate graduates, about only a little more than 3% actually gave back. They now have the number up to 10%. And so any idea, what's the number at Florida A&M?
We're around 5%, and that's unacceptable for us. We got to do a better job. We're trying to push the narrative that you got to give, and we're putting some pieces in place within the Alumni Association to ensure we can get those giving rates up. Like I said, last year we did raise $715,000 at our national convention fundraising breakfast. We're going to try to do the same thing and better that on Saturday. But we've got to get better than 5%.
Julian Malvo, your president emerita of Bennett College, they are facing a serious problem right now. I've gotten different people saying, look, university potentially could close its doors. I mean, you get those emails all the time. Yeah. But look, you had to deal with that in terms of trying to raise money.
I called you one time.
Yeah, you did.
Put it on
the
radio.
All of a sudden she's like, hey, I need $30,000 in like a week to keep some students in college, put on a radio show. And again, how hard was it for you challenging people, graduates, to say, can you give $5?
Roland, the extent to which we have indifference, people will come and party, they'll come to alumni weekend, they'll spend all that money, but they won't give. Now, Bennett is better than many. We have about a 33% alumni giving rate. And Hampton, Morehouse, Spelman, Tuskegee are among those that have over 30, and in a couple cases, over 40%. But all too often, our people don't give back. And it's not, like you said, you don't have to give me 10 grand if you don't have 10 grand. But when I go to a foundation and say, I have an 80% alumni giving rate, that foundation says your alums believe in you.
Right.
And that's the thing. When you go in with 30%, well, what's wrong with the other 60, 70%?
And Lieutenant, that's the real issue there when it comes to corporate giving and the foundations. They're going to say, if the people who went there don't give,
don't feel it,
why should I?
Exactly. The giving rates have got to be up there. That's going to help us drive in those corporate dollars, and it's going to show the corporations that we do care about our institutions, and we just got to do a better job of it, Roland.
And I'll tell you,
This is a last gasp for black education, because we have so much racism. We saw this young brother killed. So here's the deal. If you didn't go to an HBCU, adopt one and give to it, because this is where people have discretion. We can let your no good nephew in the school to get his act together in a semester.
Well, I'll tell you this here, and literally before the Bill Cosby allegations came back to life, I got a call from him where he was trying to rally a significant number of celebrities to do these giving days for HBCUs, and never came to fruition. But the reality is this here, anybody watching, I don't care who you are listening, you can send $10 a month.
To Bennett
College.
Exactly.
You can send $100. You can send $5. But if you're not sending Jack, take your damn university letters off because you're embarrassing the university.
Amen.
Lieutenant Clark, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, folks. Up next on News 1 Now, Iyanla Van Zandt is here. Glad to see her healthy and well. But also, can she fix these crazy people out here? Can we start with Monique?
Okay.
Fighting Oprah and Tyler Perry and Lee Daniels. I'm tired of this black on black crime. Next, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, on Wednesday, we'll have the State of Black America Town Hall presented by the National Urban League right here on TV 1 at 8 p.m. Eastern. Here is another sneak peek.
If we were to provide tax incentives the way we've done for veterans, for instance. So you hire a veteran, you get a special tax break or tax incentives, and that has been a very successful program. We need to find innovative strategies from a federal, state, and local level to encourage or incentivize companies to look at these young men and young women that have an opportunity, to give them an opportunity to be employed without penalizing them for paying their debt to society.
All right, folks, again, 8 p.m. Eastern right here on TV One, National Urban League presents State of Black America Town Hall. All right, folks, Iyanla Van Zandt joins us. I ain't reading all that stuff. It's wasting my damn time. This is the fourth season of Fix My Life on the OWN Network. Let's get right to it. What's happening?
You are so bad.
No, I mean, no sense in reading all that stuff. People know who you are.
Well, hopefully.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so last time we were here, remember a year ago, Oprah spoke at Essence, and you had some health issues. You're back.
Yeah.
You good?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good. You know, it was a surprise. I've never had,
I've never been hospitalized. I've never had a problem in my life. I was out of the country. My colon ruptured. I ended up having to be airlifted back to the U.S. to have surgery. So by the time, it took me 6 months to just get over the shock of it. But I'm good, you know, learned lots of lessons.
All right, so let's talk about fixing life. Okay, I tweeted this the other day. Okay, you're always dealing with drama on the show, and these people who can't get over their past issues, they got baggage. So I tweeted this. This constant back and forth between Monique and Lee Daniels, and now she went off on Tyler Perry and Oprah. She mad about something Oprah did on a show years ago with her mama and her brother in sexual molestation. And I literally tweeted, yo, can y'all get these people in a room and say, look, enough of this? Because so my point is, the need for us, if we have issues with other people,
yeah.
You don't have to keep going off on folks in public.
No.
Deal with that thing privately.
Yeah. Or just deal with it within yourself. The thing that we don't understand is when you have a problem with somebody, it's your problem. It really isn't the other person's problem. So you got to get to the core of what's going on and what's happening. And that's what we look at on Fix My Life. No one else is ever responsible for what goes on inside of you. Now, they may trigger it, but to heal it, to balance it, to neutralize it, to eliminate, it's your responsibility.
I mean, I never understand. Now, look. There's a lot of stuff I might forgive. I don't forget now because you ain't going to screw me twice. But when I see people literally carrying baggage, and I'm sitting there going, somebody might ask me, Roland, you not upset? I'm like, I forgot the next day. I'm not carrying that stuff 15, 20 years later.
Well, again, what gets triggered in you is your unhealed material. It doesn't matter what anybody else does, what comes up for you, how you feel about it, what you think about it, that's your unhealed stuff. So when somebody does something that upsets you, instead of going after them because you're upset, it's okay, what is this really about? Whether it's Monique or private people, and one of the things I do on Fix My Life is I bring celebrities on to try to show people we're all in the same boat. And just because you have a TV show or you're married to a star,
don't matter.
Don't mean that you're not gonna have real issues. So I try to show that balance.
Well, I know at one point you're like, ooh, I'm gonna strangle this child because she done lost her mind.
No, you know, the doctor can't get mad at you because you bleed on his shoes.
But some folks don't push you to the brink.
I think that has only happened to me twice. One was
DMX.
Yeah.
And we know that.
One, yeah. And the other one was where children were involved and the adults were just totally oblivious to how their wahala was being destructive towards the children. So those were really the only two times.
Talk about the reaction for people. So surely there are folks who watch and then all of a sudden stuff starts flooding in to you about their drama and their baggage and how hopefully they were helped by being able to watch that particular episode.
That's the thing. You know, Roland, I think there are probably 10 human life problems. And each of us are living them out in some level, in some way, different characters, different origins. And that's what I want us to do. Give the skills, the tools, and the principles. It don't matter what the problem are, there's a principle. Doesn't matter what the situation is, there's a skill and a tool you're missing that if you get that, you can work with the problem.
Now, see, what I appreciate is the fact that, because, you know, we always have this stuff where there's this assumption in relationships, the guy is always the one with the problem. And I love it when you're like, no, baby, let me deal with you because it ain't just him.
Right. No, because if you have the upset, it's your upset. It's not the other person's upset. We just have to keep remembering that.
Well, look, I really do need you to call Monique and say, look, I need to sit you in that chair.
Is she willing?
I don't know. I don't know. But here's one. I wonder if anybody has ever approached. Look, we did a show last year. I interviewed her. She talked about the whole issue with Lee and what happened and being blackballed in Hollywood and stuff along those lines. I just think every time you keep going there, whether it's on stage and Periscope, whatever, resolve the issue. At some point, you got to resolve it versus keep holding on to that thing.
Well, this is not about Monique. It's about the issue.
That's right.
You have an experience with somebody, and as a result of that experience, your life looks a certain way. It's still your responsibility because it's still your life. That's not about Monique. That's in general.
Right.
Because people do that. He divorced me. She got another man, so my life looks like this. No. Your life real looks
Literally, I just saw a story with Steve Harvey's ex-wife. They've been divorced forever. They're filing a $60 million lawsuit against him saying, he broke me. Baby.
Yeah, right. That's the piece we have to get, whether it's public people, life happens.
Yep.
Life happens.
All right, folks, Fix My Life airs on Saturday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. Y'all, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Back in 60 seconds, News 19 TV.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
Birthday shout-out time. Octavia Spencer turns 47. Leslie Uggams, of course. Y'all, most recently seen on Empire. We know Leslie Uggams. She turned 74. All right, folks, tomorrow on News 1 Now, you know Trump will do something else stupid, so we'll talk about that tomorrow on the show. We'll also talk about black women who won the challenge Democratic National Committee as well. I was in the show the same way, saying holla. I'm letting y'all do it.
Holla.
No.
Holla.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.